Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is the man who doesn't rap, but he definitely knows the words. That is Mr. Spencer Williams.
I don't know what that has to do with anything.
It has something to do with everything. We're going to talk about it right now. And we are actually rolling solo tonight, as we gave the interns the night off, as Amy was a big fat veto on this movie, so we were like, okay, we'll cover it. So we have an exciting show in store, as we're going to be taking a look at Lee Cronin's recent film, and that is Lee Cronin's The Mummy. So stick around as we dive into that and talk about the movie and get into all the nitty-gritty. But before we do, Spencer, why don't you give us that official synopsis goodness?
Tune into brand new episodes each and every week.
Weekly.
On all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com.
I also, do it for two people, man.
Yeah. For two people. Also, connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmosophers and on Twitter, Instagram, and Threads at filmosophy101. Also, we're on Blue Sky at Filmosophers Podcast.
That's right. If you look for us, we got a website. If you check out our website at filmosophers.com, there we got allegedly over 300 episodes, everything from action, anime, comedy, suspense, thrills, and chills. Horror. If you're looking for it, we got it. Head on over to our website at filmosophers.com. You can also check us out wherever podcasts are streaming. And that's iTunes, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, iHeart, Amazon Music. I think that's it. You can tune into your heart's desire on any one of those platforms. Look for us there at The Filmlosophers and listen in. Tell us what you thought. Did you watch any of the recent movies we just did the review last week for They Will Kill You, which was a really fun movie and an even more fun... No, I'm sorry. I take that back. See, that's how bad last week's episode was.
Yeah, I was about to just go with you on that one.
Because last week was Streaming is for Lovers. If you want a whole experience there, check out that episode, which was 367 or 467. But I'm talking about 466, where we talked about They Will Kill You. That was a fun movie. Go check that one out. and if you like what you're, give us a 5-star review. We've earned it.
We have.
We'll give you the rest of the social links at the end of the episode. As much as I would love to continue to belabor,
talk about what happened last week.
Yes, because I don't want to talk. I am scared. Apparently, she has more in store for us.
Yeah.
So, just giving you heads up that that is on the horizon. But before we get into that, we got a little bit of movie news, as a slew of trailers that I am assuming debuted out of CinemaCon made their way finally to the smaller screens for us peons, if you will, the peasant folk, for us to finally experience. And there's a couple of them that we both want to talk about, but I'm going to kind of open, because I know Spencer has a really great one, and we'll get to that one. But I know, because intern manager Amy isn't here right now, she would want us to talk about the trailer to the sequel film of one of her most favorite movies, Practical Magic 2, starring Sandra Bullock and Nicole Kidman, also with Lee Pace. There's quite a few other notable folks in it, but a lot of the same people from the first film do make an appearance in this one. And according to Amy, it apparently follows some... Oh, I don't know if there's actually a book for this. So I don't know if you know this. There's a book series to the Practical Magic franchise.
Okay.
Have you ever seen the first Practical Magic?
I have.
Oh, wow.
Don't expect me thing about
that. Is just a surprise in itself. We're still trying to like bend like all the rules and try to get you to finally watch The Fifth Element, but you've seen Practical Magic.
Someone else was like, Practical Magic, it's such a great movie. And I'm like,
okay, hold on. Did you actually watch it? Or were you with this other person when you were watching it? Did you actually watch the movie?
Yeah, I watched it. It was a zero device movie because they would have gotten on my case.
Okay. Well, either way, according to Amy, she's excited because apparently this sequel trailer has a few elements that are from the book series, the prequel book. I guess there's a prequel book that came out for the story, and there's some elements that looks like it takes from there. She's excited. I have to admit, the first movie was kind of cute. This one looks interesting. Oddly enough, Sandra Bullock and Nicole Kidman have to be vampires because they don't really look that old at all. And I don't know
if it's because of this movie.
Probably. I have no doubt. Probably. But this one looks exciting. I don't know what the release date is because we don't have an intern to do the research. But the film will be released, if not this year, early next year. Spencer?
Okay. So I want to talk about a movie that has been on such a roller coaster of a ride without it even being released. And it's Coyote versus Acme. Now, if you are new to even hearing about this, I don't actually fully blame you. Because what had happened was a while back, a man named David Zaslav, who was in charge of Warner Brothers before it bought Discovery, or maybe after. I'm getting confused at this point.
We all are confused. It's okay.
He went on like an animation killing spree where he was like, if it's animated, put it in the vault so we can claim the tax credits. And so they were in the middle of making this movie, which is live action, but partially animated. And it was just thrown into a vault and it was pretty much almost done from my recollection. And they just didn't release it. And so it went up for sale. And so this new company called Ketchup Entertainment.
Yeah, that was a really interesting one. I'm like, wait, what are you calling it? But
yeah, so they came out of nowhere. They're like, yeah, we're buying this movie and we're going to put it out. So it still has Warner Brothers logos, but it's also being like distributed by Ketchup. So the trailer came out actually yesterday, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. Actually yesterday morning.
Yeah. And it's a pretty fantastic trailer because the trailer kind of like does like a bunch of nudging and winky of like, this is the movie Acme doesn't want you to see. And Acme in this case is Warner Brothers.
Essentially, yeah. And it looks really fun. Like as much as, you know, I almost got tired out of that whole play between animation and live action. We're talking to you, the new Space Jam movie. there wasn't really a lot of hope for this to come out because it's a dual live action slash animation movie. This looks fun.
Yeah.
And with Will Forte and like the whole cast of characters and just the whole uncanny. Oh, John Cena's in it as well.
Yeah, I don't think I realized he was going to be in this movie.
Neither did I, which makes me happy the fact that he's in it because John Cena is really funny and he's super silly and he loves kids. So, you know, he probably had a grand old time in this movie. Will Forte is just, he's a cartoon character in human clothing. Let's be honest. So it does look fun and it looks really, really silly. Do we know when that one's going to drop?
August 28th.
Wait, this year?
Yes, this year. It's already done.
Wow.
They just have to do the marketing.
Oh, very true. Very true. I guess the only other couple of ones to really look out for as far as other movies, you know, we had the release of a ridiculous movie called Hungry, which is a play on Hungry, Hungry Hippos. I kid you not. It is called Hungry. I don't know
if it's a horror movie.
It is a horror movie.
Of course it is.
Takes place in the bayou of Louisiana where the trailer is ridiculous. Like you almost have to watch it to kind of understand the chaoticness of this trailer.
I'm going to open it so I remember to watch it after this.
There's literally the guy who was, he was in, he usually plays like a bad guy in some movies. He's in this, which is odd. And this, they make hippos to be like these bloodthirsty killers who kill for fun kind of creatures.
I mean, they're hungry hippos.
And it's literally just called Hungry. So, yeah, that's a thing. So, I mean, with that and so many others, as we keep kind of seeing the new things that pop up, there's a ton more trailers that are probably continue to drop as we go further into the week. So be on the lookout, you know, and if you see anything or if there's one we missed that we should have mentioned, let us know in the comment section. We'd love to hear it. But that does bring us to our conversation of the evening, and that is our look at Lee Cronin's The Mummy. This movie has been, uniquely enough, kind of thrown into the zeitgeist, if you will, of the conversations about Universal revamps, Universal monster revamps. And this is one of those movies where the consideration for what it was going to do in terms of building that new I guess, class of monster within Universal was supposed to kind of usher in. So we'll talk about what that means and kind of all the other nitty-gritty parts of it. But before I do, Spencer, why don't you give us that official synopsis goodness?
The young daughter of a journalist disappears into the desert without a trace. 8 years later, the broken family is shocked when she is returned to them as what should be a joyful reunion turns into a living nightmare.
Directed by Lee Cronin, the film stars Jack Rayner, Laya Costa, Mae Calamawi, Natalie Grace, and Veronica Falcone. A couple key pieces about the film. Following the success of Evil Dead Rise, producer James Wan approached Lee Cronin about directing a mummy movie. Cronin agreed after deciding to take a different, more horror-focused approach to the material. No lie. This is definitely a pivot from what you would expect from most mummy films. Mm. It's not in the same vein. Actually, when I had gotten home, I had mentioned to Amy, I had told her that this movie was a cross between Poltergeist, The Exorcist, and what else did I say? I forgot what the thing I said. But the thing is, uniquely enough, the actual inspirations for this movie, Cronin cited Poltergeist, Seven, and The Exorcist as influences on the film's tones and themes. So I'm like, all right, I got 2 out of 3. I don't even remember what the third one was. But the film was originally titled The Mummy, but producer Jason Blum added Lee Cronin's name to distinguish it from previous mummy films. Cronin was initially unsure, but ultimately agreed. It does give it a little bit more unique flair to it, I guess. I don't know if it's something that I would say makes it stand out too much, but it is recognizable. I got to give him. And I mean, having somebody's name like Lee Cronin sounds like you own like a black magic bookstore. Like, it's a very unique name.
Yeah.
As we dive into this movie, obviously we're going to be talking about a couple different themes here and there, not to mention the fact that this movie, it's been out for about a week, so if you haven't seen it, you know, you should probably go see it, but also there are elements of the story that we may have to spoil just to continue the conversation. So you have been warned, there are slight spoilers to the movie in this one, so... let's kind of talk about expectations. So right out from the gate, what were some of your expectations?
Okay, so this is another movie I did not see the trailer to before I saw the movie.
Ah, okay.
And, you know, I didn't really go into it with much. I was just like, oh, it's a mummy movie, not Brendan Fraser's The Mummy.
Yeah.
But, you know, there will be a mummy at some point.
Yeah.
And then actually a majority of my information comes from Amy when she was talking to me about it and about how, like, you know, like a child gets kidnapped. And I'm like, oh, okay. And that's about all I knew.
I mean,
what about you, Ed?
I mean, even though I saw the trailers, that's literally kind of where my mindset was at. You had a child who was kidnapped and somehow lost for an X amount of time, is found in a coffin and is brought home, but isn't really what she seems. And I'm like, okay. Where's the mummy? Like, I was watching the trailer and I'm like, okay, I hear what you're saying. I'm hoping the movie kind of explains that a little bit more. And we'll get into whether or not it does or doesn't. So talking about first impressions, I'll let you go first because I need to know what your first impressions were.
Okay, so this is a very two-thought train. I was like, okay, this was interesting. This also is not what I would expect for something called The Mummy. Yeah. Like, not that it makes it bad, but like, that just kind of like, it was a real kind of... like rug pull in a way where I'm just like, I thought we were getting this, but then I got this instead.
Yeah.
And it's fine, but I'm like, that's not what I was expecting.
No.
Because like, really, where is the mummy? But I was just really thinking that there was going to be more to it.
Yeah.
Mummy wise, because if you had retitled this to something else that didn't have a mummy involved, I'd probably actually be more like, oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I have to agree. I feel like this movie started out with some promise. I mean, obviously you start the movie starts in Cairo in Egypt, and you're like, all right, okay, we're in the same vicinity where
we're
this
would
take.
It makes sense. Yeah. Yes.
And then it kind of takes a left field to Albuquerque, quite literally. Yeah. And oh my gosh. Yeah, literally. And we just talked about the Coyote versus Acme movie. And it kind of deviates from the story of it being about a mummy to something else.
Yeah.
And I mean, it wasn't bad, but it wasn't what I was expecting.
Yes.
You know? And so we'll dive into that in, you know, as we dive a little further into this, this movie, not trailer, but talking about, let's look at the performers of the movie. Obviously the father played by Jack Rayner. I've always been a fan of Jack Rayner. I think he's a really great actor. I think he's always carried a sense of like older brother mentality. And now that he's old enough to play dad, you know, he's, you know, dad material now. So, but I think he did well. I think he was a good performer in this one. I don't know if there's a lot to this movie that really lends itself to great acting moments.
Yeah.
You know, as sad as that sounds, and I don't mean this in a negative way, but this movie wasn't really swinging for like great acting moments.
Yeah, the actors weren't like, okay, most of the actors weren't really set up to have like very good, like, you know, like standout moments from each other. So it does, like, he did a good job, but like I feel like all, at the same time he wasn't really given a hell heck of a lot to like make him like, you know, really stand out.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the same for both, well, pretty much for everybody in the movie, the mom included. I feel like the mom had a lot of those moments too, whereas I want to preface this. We're not saying they performed bad.
Right,
I'm just saying there was no unique instance where this movie gave us a standout performance per se with some of the main cast. I would say though, that if there was a standout performer, one of them would definitely be Billy Roy, who plays Maude, the littlest sister.
Mm.
She was hilarious. Like, I thought she was the best thing in the entire movie. I know that like that there's a little girl cuteness that occurs within most of these movies where you're like, oh my gosh, that's hilarious, that's great. But not only did she do all those scenes with a unique sense of like innocence, but she made them funny. And even in the scenes where it wasn't as innocent, spoiler alert, where she's a little bit more maleficent, I guess, a little bit more, you know, evil, those scenes actually played to great entertaining affair.
Yeah, like, it is weird. Something horrible's happening, and then like, she's just in the corner laughing about it, and you're like, yeah, this is now funny.
Yeah. I think the other side of that coin too as well, the girl who played the sister, the one that was found, Natalie Grace, she was scary. She was good. She played the role really well. I don't know how much of the role was her specifically versus either CG, or obviously some of the voice opportunities were hers versus, you know, computer generated voices or voice modulation or even voiceovers. But still, like her physical performance in this movie.
Her physical performance was actually quite good. I actually really liked it.
Yeah.
Because she did a good job of like just like being like off, but also like engaging, because you're like, what the heck is happening with this girl?
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. I do think she made for a much more unique, I guess, foil in this movie as what she is, without giving that part away.
Right.
The brother was okay. I mean, he's there.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. It's like, he's there.
The grandma was okay. I thought the grandma was nice and fun too. Again, all these particular characters, everybody that's in it, you know, even the girl who plays young Katie, she was great at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
All these people did good, but they weren't really given an opportunity to stand out. The littlest girl, obviously, she's the innocent part of the whole movie. She's the cute part. So there's a little bit more like recognition of that. The grown Katie, the daughter that's found, her name is Katie. Her version is very physical. And so like there's a lot of physical activity that she has to do. And she does it really well, physical acting. But other than that, you know, it's yeah. You know, I think that's kind of the best way to put it. I'm not trying to knock the movie or knock any of the performers in it. I'm just saying that there wasn't really a great opportunity for them to shine.
Yeah.
So, moving to kind of the story element of it. This is
this is where we get into like the real problem area of the movie.
Yes.
Because when you call your movie The Mummy, I expect there either to be a mummy on the loose, mm-hmm. or the mummy is the cause of some woe,
yeah.
and we need to like either put it to sleep or do something.
Yeah, like there's a curse of a mummy somewhere, and this person's being hounded by something, or there's an actual mummy that is hounding people, or there's something. This is more of a possession movie.
Yeah, it's demon possession.
And it's like, okay, I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're doing. I get your subtle hints here and there where you're trying to make it a mummy movie. But I do believe that this is what I told Amy. This movie is as much a mummy movie as the Chris Pratt Super Mario Brothers movie is an Italian movie. Like, that's how I feel yeah. like the comparison is. Like, it's not really close. It's only tied in by the name. They yeah. both have mummy in the name. Mario is apparently an Italian name, so it works out there. Like, that's like there's very loose connections, but it's not really like there's no indication that this is leaning towards like, okay, the entity is a mummy or it is some form of a mummy or the curse is based on a mummy.
Well, very specifically, the entity is not a mummy.
Yeah.
Which is what's confusing about it, because like to pacify the demon because they don't know how to banish it, you have to turn someone else into a mummy-like situation.
No, you have to possess someone else with the same entity. Oh my gosh, what is that movie? Keep talking.
Okay. Well, the reason I said that is because like they use the word mummification, but like this isn't like textbook mummification. Like,
no.
Because like I expected this girl to be dead. Like, I thought that like before I saw the movie, I thought they were just going to have to entertain a corpse at their home or something like that. But nope. Her body technically works perfectly fine, and that was kind of not what I was expecting for that at all. But yeah, I just feel like the name of this movie is not what it should have been.
No, without a doubt. And I feel like it was a slight miss on their part for that, because it's like you're looking at a movie that holds a name where we just recently had the Wolfman movie.
Yeah.
And then I'm pretty sure there's going to be a Dracula movie coming up. That we just had this Frankenstein-esque type of story with Guillermo del Toro.
Which was very good.
Which was great. And now we're introducing a mummy story. And mind you, all of those other ones, even the Wolfman, the Wolfman movie, as loosely as it was tied to the Wolfman kind of mythos, you still ended up with a wolfman.
Yeah.
You had a wolf-like humanoid that was terrorizing this household and somebody was turning into a werewolf, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah.
Some type of lichen. There was nothing, you know, other than the only thing that tied it to the mummy aspect was the sarcophagus.
Yeah.
That was it. Yeah. I'm trying to think, like, was there, like, the bandages that were wrapped around her very loosely and very like lightly placed upon her.
Which for her mom being a nurse, I really feel like she should have figured out that like hey, this isn't actually your daughter's skin or whatever the heck was happening with that.
Yeah.
Because, like, at a certain point in the movie, like, she just takes off her skin like it's a shirt, but she still has, like, skin under it. It was super confusing.
And it was super weird because it's like, wait, so did she have extra skin on top? Or, like, was it, like, embedded underneath? Like,
well, it's weird because I picked up on it, like, early on in the movie. I'm like, she doesn't look like she's actually, like, using her actual skin. And I couldn't tell if it was just, like, a bad prosthetic they were using, but no, that was intended. And so I didn't understand how her mom, who's supposed to be a medical professional and makes a big point about it in the movie, didn't also see that.
Yeah. It's interesting. Like, this again, so to preface, we're not saying that the story wasn't good. We're saying that the issue we have is in calling a movie The Mummy, you expect kind of the focal point of the movie to be based on a mummy. Mm-hmm. And what we got was the focal point of the movie was a possessed little girl who seemed to have some type of rap incantation embedded in her skin.
Yeah.
So to speak. And it definitely felt like this movie worked a little hard to pay homage to Sam Raimi, which I get. Lee Cronin kind of cut his teeth on Sam Raimi remakes. Mm. So it only makes sense. Like, there are certain parts of, like, the movie where it pays homage to that. Like, I think if there's one thing I'd have to say, like, the sound design for it was a little on, like, the sensitive side. Everything was amped up. You could hear people sliding into chairs. You could hear people shuffling their feet as if it was super loud. I'm like, okay, I get it. You're trying to scare us with the booms and the bombs, like, whatever. But it was on a whole nother level with this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the sound design in this movie, like, when, like, it was early on where I feel like someone was eating or something. It was something that should have been, like, unnotable that I just super noticed. I'm like, why are we focusing on this? Especially when it seems like we are nowhere close to there being, like, you know, a jump scare of any point. Like,
yeah,
it was early on in the movie, and I was just like, that's a interesting choice to do with your sound design.
It is, because it's like you're ultimately attuned to being, like, hyper aware of everything. Mm-hmm. Like, you're hearing the sound of, like, flies buzzing. You're hearing, you know, the sound of, like, X, Y, and Z. Like, everything is now, you're made aware of every single thing going on in the room.
Right.
And then the boom hits and you're like, oh my God. And you're like, oh, someone just put their foot down. Like, it's kind of like that. Like, we don't, to create, like, proper anticipation and build up, you don't have to amp up the sound to a certain point. You can create fear and dread with just simply the room existing and the space in it. And mind you, this does tend to be like one of the trademarks for Lee Cronin. Mm. I don't really recall, like, Sam Raimi doing anything like that in his previous films, but it's become more and more of, like, a staple within horror movies. You want to create the jump scare moment. So what do? You amp up all the quiet noises so that way all you can hear is every single, like, soft sound. You pretty much turn any background music all the way down, and then you give a quick 2-second lull, and then boom, and you scare people. And it's like, okay, I mean, that's cool and all, but, you know, and that's not to say that this movie didn't have any, you know, good scares in it. It had plenty. But to say, like, if you're going to manipulate the sound design that way to create those moments instead of actually building true fear and dread in the scenes, it kind of feels like a little bit of, like, a cop-out. Like, you're almost missing the point of a horror movie, especially in 2026. Like, we're not in 2007. We're not rewatching Paranormal Activity. We're not trying to see, you know, all these movies where people just jump in front of the camera and scare the bejesus out of everybody in the movie theater. We're in an era where smart horror is more honored in theaters than just, like, take a look at everything we've had so far. Weapons has been a really big hit. You know, there's a new Insidious movie that's coming out, mm-hmm. which those movies carry a sense of, you know, intelligence to them. Like, there's all these different movies. Mind you, there's a couple of those ones I just mentioned, Hungry, which is based on Hungry Hungry Hippos, the whole Winnie the Pooh franchise. Yeah. Like there's those. And mind you, they have their audiences. This is coming out of Blumhouse. There's a certain, like, either it's Blumhouse, A24, like Blumhouse typically has sometimes good, sometimes not so good horror movies. Like I know they did a Fantasy Island horror movie, which was very interesting. I never saw it, even though I own it. I have it. I haven't had a chance to just watch it just because it doesn't interest me. But like Blumhouse is also the one that does like the Truth or Dare movie. So they do all these like escape room movies. Literally, they're called Escape Room. And those are all out of Blumhouse. So I don't want to water down this movie's effectiveness on being scary, but I do want to double down on the fact that this was supposed to be a mummy movie.
Yeah.
And we didn't really get all that. Now,
it's so funny that you bring up like Paranormal Activity,
mm-hmm.
because I was actually thinking about that movie during this. I was like, I never seen this movie, and I kind of wish I did so I could have a bit of a comparison, because I suddenly got like the vibe that they were, even though that's like through the look of a camera,
yeah,
that there was probably something that was a bit similar in other aspects.
Oh, I'm pretty sure. I believe I have a good chunk of them on my, like, I own a few of them. If you want to borrow them, you're more than welcome to.
Nice.
But that's not to say that everything about this movie was negative. And there are a couple of high points, and we're going to mention those right after these messages. All right, we're back. And so talking about this movie, obviously we've mentioned a lot of the other sides of things, the downsides. But there were a few upsides. Like I mentioned, you know, the younger performers, the two daughters, they actually did really well. And in doing so, they created some very unique moments in this movie where you knew instantly where this was going to go. Case in point, earlier, not so much earlier, but after the events of the kidnapping and the daughter being gone, there's an 8-year jump. And at the time when they were still in Cairo, the mom was pregnant with child, and they were not with anything else, but with a child.
Yeah.
And so with the jump, obviously the child had been born and, you know, grew up to be the youngest daughter. And there's a scene in there where she's like showing her dad, she's like, look, dad, I got a loose tooth. And, you know, and the moment I saw that, I'm like, we're going to revisit this. I just know it. And this movie didn't disappoint. There's the scene where that tooth comes back, and you see that tooth, and other teeth, and
just glad it's her baby teeth, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, yeah, and mind you, like the scene with her is like really unique and interesting, and a little funny, because like I really wish I could talk about all these different things. Because it just gives away so many different aspects of the movie. But like the youngest daughter really plays it up to the scene and does well. The older daughter, the found daughter, if you will, has a lot of really interesting moments as well in this movie. We see some really great, interesting moments where I guess part of her is able to speak through or communicate through the catatonic state of where she, like what she's in right now, using Morse code, which you have no idea where the heck Morse code came from. Like, what the heck? But apparently she knew Morse code.
Yeah, like, from Cairo.
Well, yeah, you learned that after the fact. You're like,
no, oh. You learned it when she was still in the movie.
What part?
At the very beginning, because that's what they were doing before they started watching the news story that the dad did.
Uh-huh.
She was trying to get him to do Morse code lessons.
Okay. I'm going to be honest. I came into the movie a little late. Maybe maybe like 5 minutes late.
Okay, so like the movie starts off with like just tapping,
yeah.
And you realize like, oh, she's trying to learn Morse code.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So I came in right around the time when the mom was planning to leave for work.
Okay.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I came in right at the time when the younger brother drop the doll off of the ledge to see if the parachute would work.
Okay. Yeah.
So
that was pretty much the only thing you missed. And then, yeah, just his story.
Okay. So, okay, cool.
Yeah.
So, I mean, okay, it comes back. So great. She actually knew it. But like that moment in itself, like that's really jarring in just the way her mannerisms are. And she's like clicking her teeth. And it almost sounds like a clackboard. It's like, and it's like, it was very, very unsettling. Was there any like other parts that stood out to you as far as the horror aspect?
Okay. Yeah, I want to piggyback off your thing because like every so often the movie would be pretty good at like doing something that was like insanely unsettling. Like that whole like mouth chomping, like clicky clack so that he could like figure out what she was trying to tell him. I'm like, we could have just done a jump cut. I didn't need to actually watch him like dot, dash, dash the whole thing out. But like, it was an interesting idea, but I'm like, yeah, I just don't need like close-ups of someone else's mouth while they're just like very
But that was the unsettling part for me. Yeah, it's like, okay.
It was.
Like, not to take a little bit of a rabbit trail, but like, we're in an age where movies are no longer like you don't scare the same way as you did like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
We don't like, there's no way that people are, even 10 years ago, we're not scaring the same way. People don't get scared instantly because there's a loud noise or there's a scary monster on the screen or like even some grotesque things.
Well, I think Amy would.
Yeah, but Amy's Amy. But this is one of those situations where it's like we're in an age where you have to be smart about the horror you create.
Yeah.
You can't just put a scary monster on the screen and expect people, not to say that this is what this movie did, this is an aside. You can't just put a scary monster on the screen and expect people to immediately react in horror. Most of the time, you'll get a reaction of laughter. And so you have to be intelligent about the way you present your horror. You have to recognize the journey that you're putting your audience through. You have to recognize what certain beats that you have to hit so that way you can get to that crescendo, if you will, of that certain horror moment. You know, it's like music. Like you and I were both musicians. Mm. You have to see the way the song is built and then allow it to rise and fall and rise and fall and then come to a crescendo and then slowly like slip back into the shadows.
Yeah.
Like that's kind of how horror now has to be considered. It's no longer just anybody grabs a camera, makes a movie and it's like, oh, this is it. Although some YouTubers are proving otherwise.
Well, we're going to see. There's more to that coming down the line.
Yeah, very true. So coming back to this, like, there are certain elements in this movie that really work as a horror, as a horror element, as a horror scene. Like there are certain scenes where the daughter is Katie, the found daughter, the mummy daughter, is absolutely like terrifying. And I mean this as a lover of horror movies. I loved it, so I'm gonna mention it. Like it was absolutely, you know, horrific and beautiful at the same time because I had a good time with that part. Again, with the caveat in the back of my mind constantly saying, how is this a mummy movie? How is this? But either way, that aside, like the idea of this movie without the title was actually pretty sound.
Yeah.
If you're looking for those scares, there are buildups in this movie and there are moments that are earnest out of the recognition of pure dread and the fear of a parent not being able to A, take care of your child, or B, trying to pretty much being helpless in finding hope and salvation for your child. Mm-hmm. Like, because it starts out as a movie where the family brings Katie home and they're just not able to take care of her because of just how much her body needs help in recovering.
Yeah, that was the thing I also didn't quite get. Like, I understand that, like, you know, you found your daughter. It's important to rally around her.
Yeah.
you are not going to be able to like help her through the mental anguish of being kidnapped for 8 years.
Yeah.
Even if you're a medical professional.
Yeah.
Like she was like, is she a
doctor? Was she a nurse?
I thought nurse. That's what the vibe I was getting.
That's what I was getting too. And it's like there's moments in this movie where like the conversation are happening and it transitions from a horror movie to a straight up like family drama.
Cause
it's like, you can't fix her. I can fix her. Don't you think I can fix my, and it's like, It felt, for what Lee Cronin was creating, those scenes felt way too real for them to just be written for this movie. And I don't know if it's based out of like personal grief or any kind of instances he's experienced. But the fact is, those scenes felt very genuine in terms of the source of where they're coming from. And I got to give it to Lee Cronin. Like whatever he's gone through, man, he's gone through it. But the fact is that, those scenes, because there's multiple scenes like this where it's like it deviates, it immediately drops the facade of being a horror movie to peel back what's at the core, which is a fear of losing people.
Like, I read this somewhere and I've been trying to think where, but I was reading about how he did say that he actually did base like some of the lines off of his own grief. I think it was from a death of a family member.
Oh, well, I mean, there you go. Like, because, okay.
Ah, yes. It was partially based off his own personal experience with grief following his mother's death.
Uh-huh. See, and so this is one of those things, especially within, not to sound stereotypical, but especially within Latin households. I don't know what ethnicity Lee Cronin is.
I think he's Irish or Scottish.
I don't know, but they had a Mexican family in this thing.
Yeah.
And I'm like... Okay, there were moments where he hit a little too close to home with some of these things. I'm like, okay, Lee Cronin, you're doing a novella next, right? Because this is about on par. But like, peeling back the curtain a bit, I've had instances where I've had family members who had to, you know, who unfortunately had to either stay at home with one of my parents or go to a home, and it's like, you recognize the struggle within them of whether or not they could actually handle doing the day to day and taking care of them while taking care of themselves as well and their own home. Or do they acquiesce to the burden, unfortunately, of doing this? And do they, you know, place them in a home? And it's like, I've seen this conversation happen way too often within my family. And it's a hard one. Like you don't want to let go. You don't want to relinquish whatever semblance of control you have over what's happening in the situation of your own home, of your own family, because you feel like the moment you let go of everything. And I think that's kind of where Lee Cronin is building at this time, in this moment of like, I see, like he's saying, I see what it looks like to have the most thinnest of threads to hold on to as far as hope. And people hold on to it with everything they've got. And it's like, I get it. And I think you get it as well. Like, it's one of those things where when a director shows that much vulnerability within a film, you have to look at what he's really having, what he's really trying to say at the core of it, you know?
It's so funny because I also remember that scene. I'm like, why is this here? Because, like, this is good, but, like, I feel like also it doesn't fully jive. Like, I feel like, there is like a different lens that this movie could be shot through for the same director.
Yeah.
Where he could like, it could be an amazing family drama.
Yeah. Cause it's crazy. Like you look at where this movie is trying to lead you as far as a horror movie. And then it stops dead cold in its tracks and becomes a very intimate family moment. Like almost like a family memory for the director, the creator, whoever decided to put that in there. It was very like intimate and it was very vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for him to put that in there and to be specific as to say, you're going to say this and then you're going to do this and then you're going to say this and you're going to do this and you're both immediately going to realize how wrong you both are. And it immediately evokes this mentality of like, he knows, like it's out of truth. This isn't out of fiction. And then it continues on with the story. There are other moments where it revisits those times where, you know, those family moments, those intimate moments. There's a scene where the mom is like, you know, I don't think we can keep her here for much longer.
Yeah.
And the dad's thinking that she's talking about something else. And she goes, I'm not talking about her, through tears. And he's like, oh, and he realizes what she's saying. And it's like the amount of grief, but relief that also comes with the recognition of what that means to have somebody give up that last recognition of hope, that semblance of some type of salvation for, or hope or, you know, healing or whatever it may be for that person. And to see that last bit being relinquished for the hope of whatever may come next, or for preparation of whatever's to come next. Like, there's a lot in that scene as well. There's multiple scenes where I got to give it to Lee Cronin, where he absolutely pulls at the very center of your heartstrings beyond the horror element, really helps you see that this pain doesn't just come in the form of like fictional stories like this. This is a pain that has been felt before. Now, obviously, it didn't surround this kind of situation, thankfully.
Right. Yeah.
You know, nobody's getting their kid buried for 8 years and like, all right, make sure you bring him back after 8 years. Like, no, nothing like that is happening. But it's really kind of eye-opening to recognize a director who's willing to put that much of his own, I guess, own pain and healing into a movie like this for the scope of you know, transparency.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yes, this movie, again, this is going to be the broken record of the evening. This movie is not a horror movie, this movie is not a mummy movie.
Right.
But it's definitely a complex horror movie that does have deeper meaning to it beyond the name, beyond everything else there. The deeper recognition of someone processing through their own instances of loss and losing, you know, whether if it's something they love or someone they love, you know, and again, this is a horror movie. We're in 2026. The last 10 years of horror movies have had such an impact, not only in the mental health space, but even the recognition of certain aspects of healing oneself and recognizing the need for, you know, self-help and things of that sort. So mental health and things of that sort. But yeah.
Yeah.
So
I would like to bring up a bit of an issue I did have with this movie, if that's all right.
Okay.
Okay. These parents are unobservant.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing. I know they've lost a daughter. There's lots of nonsense happening around the house. But I feel like you would notice if your house was just slowly starting to physically change.
True.
Like if the floors had suddenly just become like very brittle, or if the walls looked like they had mold in them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I a lot's happening, but I feel like like if we're hearing all these like little things, you should be able to see what's right in front of you. Like it's happening from one place.
That's a great point. But I raise you again to consider the fact that in the midst of all of the loss that they're facing and the difficulty, it would make a little bit of sense if they were struggling to even pay attention to what was in front of their nose.
See, here's the thing about this. If that's mold, like, your lungs are donezo. You've got to pay a little bit of attention.
Maybe. But, I, you know what? And that's not even also to say as to whether or not that's something physical where they see, or is it just for the audience to see?
Did this movie really do that, where it was like audience only vision?
I don't know.
I don't really feel like that was a thing for this movie.
I don't know. I'm just saying that the fact is that so much is going on in this movie. And yeah, again, yeah, this is me trying to give credit to where whatever, I guess, whatever is meant to have been felt or recognized within this movie. I'm trying to see as much of it because I'm not seeing the mummy part. You know, I'm trying to see like, okay, what else is going on with this movie? Because to be honest, again, I can see again where he's trying to pull from that space, that mental space of like where you're fully engrossed in what's just happening within your own mind, and you're so inundated with all the stuff going on that you're like, what am I supposed to do now? How am I supposed to keep moving forward? What else, other than the fact that I need to find solutions to this problem, is important?
Right.
Like, there's literally a scene where the dad is driving home and the daughter is, you know, saying really obscene things in the backseat, the youngest daughter, and flipping off the older brother in the front seat. And the brother's looking at his dad and he's like, he's just oblivious to what's happening, just driving forward.
That's a good point.
So, I mean, maybe the kids have seen it, but at that point, the kids are kind of also not really aware as well.
Yeah, the kids are also losing it too. So yes. Not helpful.
So I think the recognition in this story isn't so much like the point of a mummy curse slash problem, but more so of like the already ingrained issues with deeply rooted within this family that ultimately come out because of a demon possession.
Right.
I mean, if we're calling a spade, that's where my head is at.
But it's so weird that this family needs a demon possession to really fix things.
I mean, you see this family. I mean, the only reason why they probably held it together was because the grandmother, the wife's mom,
yeah,
who's super religious, probably has been praying up and down them stairs all day, all night long. Poor woman, you know, saddens me, but still, like, I want to give it its due and recognize the good parts for the good.
Yeah.
Obviously, we've recognized some of the bad parts for the bad. But with that said, do you have any highlights or issues for this movie from your perspective?
I mean, there are like a few places in the movie where it does strike the right tone. And yeah, it is like, yeah, very tense and like very engaging to watch. And if it didn't have the albatross of the name around its neck, I would have been a lot more into it. But like, I guess that's the thing. I don't want to come across as overly negative because like, I don't want it to be like, oh, he didn't like this movie. I did like this movie, but just not with the title. I don't feel like I've had a problem with a movie as much as I do with this one, with how it was titled.
Yeah.
And
because it wasn't even like, it's not even a point where it's like, it sold you a bad, you know, bad bag of goods, if you will, you know, with the trailer, because you didn't see the trailer.
Yes.
So it's, you're literally just using the name as a point of reference.
Yeah. Yeah. That's my big problem.
I don't want to go through it again. Yes, it was my issue as well. But I do have to say, like, some of the things that were good for me, some of the highlights, this absolutely feels like a Lee Cronin movie, where Lee Cronin also did Evil Dead Rise. He's done a slew of other movies, but they all kind of have that similar vein in terms of them being so visceral and so grotesque to a certain sort of way, where there's a sense of artistry to it. Like, you have to appreciate the man who creates a scene where someone's trying to cut a toenail and the toenail comes off along with the skin all the way up the foot and up the front of the shin up to the knee.
That was the wildest thing.
That was the craziest thing. And I'm not even going to mention the fact that right before that, the mom cut a toenail and it bounced off wherever and landed in the daughter's mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's like, what? Like, that's like the TV show Martin level craziness for toenails. So it definitely carries a sense of recognition and ownership on what practical effects and some CG as well that they chose to do with this particular character and the scenes in this movie. Yeah, I mean, the story itself has a certain sense of cohesiveness outside of the title of it.
Yeah.
But again, it would be a much better considered movie outside of the title, if it had a different title.
So. Yeah, I think so too.
So wrapping this thing up, I'm going to go ahead and I actually have a question, a roundtable question for just you and I, mm-hmm, obviously, because no Amy.
Yeah.
But so we've talked about this movie and especially the issue with our name of the name of the movie. So let me ask you, if you had the chance, what would you rename the film to better fit the story.
You know, it's so interesting because, like, since my name, like, the title of the movie was, like, you know, my number one problem with it, I've actually been trying to think over the past couple of days, what would be a better name for this movie? I've actually been having a hard time with it because even, like, well, it was either the code name or the working name for this movie was, like, the Resurrection or something like that, which I also was, like...
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think I saw him talking about it or read something. I did a little bit of, like, looking stuff up because I was, like... Oh, because I remember I thought the ending was a reshot ending. That's why I wanted to see.
Oh, okay.
I don't think that that turned out to be true. So I really feel like maybe just keeping it simple with, like, the possession, because, like, I feel like if you did that, got rid of, like, the sarcophagus, like, you could probably make it still make as much sense. And it could probably be a little more focused on, like, the family drama.
Okay.
Do you have a better name?
I mean, no. But, like, I feel like if anything, this movie should have been something like, man, because you look at this movie and you look at every aspect that it's pulling from and what it's, you know, what it's trying to do, and I would honestly say I would call it either, like, The Curse or even something like, you know, The Protection. Like, I don't know, something along those lines that make it actually more relevant to the story. Yeah, it's like there's if given the time, mind you, I just came up with that question like yesterday and I didn't even think about it. But like, like anything honestly probably would have been better. Like, yeah. if I were really to be blunt about it, no offense to Lee Cronin and everything that he was trying to do, but honestly, this story was just not a Mummy movie.
Yeah.
So, like, I you know, I don't even know. Like, what was the name of the, never mind. like, there's so many other ways that this could have gone as far as naming convention, but either way, I mean, the story itself sold us a really good, you know, story and a really good journey for the character. So yeah, I really wouldn't know where to begin as far as, like, titles are concerned. Just, I would steer far away from The Mummy.
Yeah.
Well, wrapping this thing up, let's go ahead and go around the table, talk about whether the film passes or fails and how many monocles. I guess I'm going to have to start with you, Spence.
Okay. yeah, this movie definitely passes. It's actually quite a nice movie. With a really bad name for it. I keep harping on it, but I feel like that's just the real thing that's messing up this movie.
Yeah.
The lack of a real mummy is very bothersome to me. So, I mean, next time, just better title your movie. I'm actually kind of impressed that, like, shocked that, like, this is the real takeaway of the movie for me, is that, like, titles matter a lot more than I thought they did.
Yeah.
So,
well, and it's like the title of a book. You look at a book and it's called the Road to El Dorado, and it's about a banker in, you know, New York, you know, whatever. Like, it's like, okay, maybe I see the loose connection, but not really. Or it's like, you know, oh, this one's called The Journey to the Center of the Earth, and it's about
going to the moon.
Yeah, it's about going to the moon. Like, really, like, where does the resemblance from the title and its meaning to the movie, outside of the usage of one piece of equipment?
Right.
Really? Like, yeah.
So, yeah, I guess that just puts me, like, in a place where, like, I went in with, like, expecting a movie that I didn't get, and then I got something. While it was still interesting and good, it was kind of also a bit jarring. So I'm going to say it's, like, a 3.5. Not that it was, like, badly acted or directed. I just think it needs to all gel together a bit more.
Yeah, I agree. What did you give it?
3.5.
I agree. I the film, outside of the title, the film has a good story. It has a really fun, you know, journey for all the characters, and it really keeps you engaged and keeps you on the edge of your seat. And the way the film wraps up is very fun and very very satisfying, if you want to call it that. as far as like the overall review, as far as Monocles are concerned, I'm struggling with it as well, because I look at a movie, and especially as a review is concerned, I look at a movie holistically. I look at it from both the beginning and the end, including the title and every effort that it's trying to do. And if you're giving me a movie that has a name of it that's so far left field that doesn't really resonate, and it's very loosely, like, if it was more abstract, I would get it. Like, it was called, like, The Cairo Sun or something, like, I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
Like, if it was something like that, like, okay, cool, you know, very vague reference. All right, I'll bite. But you have it called The Mummy. And because we've had so many instances of mummy movies that are either so on the nose that it's quite literally sitting on your face, or it's something near to it, but it still references the understanding or mythos of a mummy, you would expect then that after all these other years of movies like that, you would get the next one to be about a mummy.
Yeah.
And it's not really about a mummy, you know, nor is it about the curse of a mummy, nor is it about any kind of, you know, like from the movie I was thinking about earlier from 2014, It Follows, like, or a mummy that's quietly chasing after people or whatever it may be. Like, none of that is existing in this movie. And it does hurt the review aspect of it, because I really, really liked the story. I liked the movie. I liked the journey of it. I loved, you know, some of the aspects of the horror elements, as well as some of the graphic nature of the movie. It adds to the story. It's something I tell my youngest, like, if you're going to write a story that has violence in it, has to be violence with a purpose. Don't write a story that has violence just for violence sake, because then it's just ridiculous. You know, give it purpose, give it meaning, give it definition. And so, like, with this one, this movie does all those things. Although there's a couple, maybe one or two scenes where I'm like, was it really necessary? Okay. But then there's also a couple other scenes I was like, that was cool. That was fun. And that's exactly what this movie was. It was a fun ride with, as you so aptly put, an albatross hanging around its neck in the form of the title. So as far as Monocles are concerned, I'm going to give this movie a 3.5 as well. I really wanted this to be something more akin to a mummy movie, because I came in hoping for a mummy movie. And instead, I got a horror possession movie that did well, but was not a mummy movie. It's like buying, you know, a can of Coke, and you crack it open, and it's, you know, prune juice. And you're like, you know, I don't know. So, but, you know, hey, to each his own. So that about wraps up another awesome episode of The Film Philosophers. Remember, you can check us out over at our website at filmphilosopherspodcast.com. There we got allegedly over 300 episodes, everything from action, anime, horror, suspense, horror movies that are aptly titled and not aptly titled. If you're looking for it, we got it. Head on over to our website at filmphilosopherspodcast.com. You can also check us out wherever Facebook, wherever socials are, at facebook.com/filmphilosophers, Twitter, Instagram, and Threads at filmphilosophy101, and Blue Sky at filmphilosopherspodcast.social. Over at Instagram is where we post a lot of our crazy hijinks, such as Spencer's big score, which he's going to do that soon one day.
Yep.
And Amy's Jane on Scene, which can be found in the only place it's ever lived, and that's Jane on Scene, and Jane on Scene only on Instagram, and Instagram only. You can also catch us wherever podcasts are streaming, and that's iTunes, Libsyn, Player FM, Audioboom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, iHeart, and Amazon Music. You can tune into your heart's desire on any one of those platforms. Look for us there at The Philosophers, and give us a like and a subscribe if you're listening in. Let us know what you think. Did you like the movie? Did you watch it? Did you think the title had any semblance to the movie a lot more than we did? I'd love to know your thoughts. We both would. Let us know your thoughts in the towel section. We love reading those and hearing from you guys. And of course, if you like what you hear, give us a 5-star review. We've earned it.
We have.
We have an exciting upcoming couple of months as we are moving into the summer season. And we are excited to dive into not only blockbusters that are for this year, but even talking about some of our favorite movies from blockbusters past. So we hope you are along for the ride, and we hope you are ready, because we are ready to get things going for our summer months. Not to mention, we are excited, as coming soon will be our May the 4th episode. And if you think we've talked about everything regarding Star Wars, guess again, because we got Star Wars stuff to talk about, and we hope you're ready for that as well. So we had a great time, and we're glad you were along for the ride, and we can't wait to see you again next week. So from all of us here at The Film Philosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
And intern Amy's not here. So, yeah. Class dismissed.